Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Verse one, it's just this idea, like, hear me, O God, when I call. Hear me, O God of my righteousness. And this is just something, this is an idea that has, like, really been developing in my heart. Just, if you don't know a little of my history, I have been with the House of Prayer since the start of the prayer room, and I was a missionary for about 7 years, and then I transitioned out of that. Like, the Lord was really strategic. And so that was, like, my identity as a young adult, was in the House of Prayer, and it was like learning this lifestyle of prayer and learning this place of prayer before the Lord. And so then whenever I transitioned out, it was really difficult because I didn't want to transition away from the, you know, the place of the prayer room, the atmosphere of worship and prayer. I didn't want to transition away from that environment because, you know, it is a great place to encounter God. This is like the very, very, very small distractions. It's an anointed atmosphere. You have people there who love you. They're happy. Your coworkers never swear or talk about immorality or darkness or anything. It's like really an awesome environment. And so I get thrust out of that environment into a blue-collar hub shift as a truck driver of FedEx Freight. And I'm hearing like what the world actually is like. You know, and I'm like, how do I get this? Because it's like whenever you're in that environment of the House of Prayer, something changes in you. And so something shifted in me, and that I really enjoy prayer. Like, prayer is one of my favorite things, that I talk to God and that I know that He's listening, that He hears me whenever I talk to Him. That's like become one of my favorite things. That's become one of the main things. If you could say, like, Luke, what's like one of the main things in, as far as like, what's the main thing in your life? It's that really the main thing that I do is I kind of just am by myself for most of the day and I talk to God. And that was something that when I had that in the House of Prayer, and that I had to find it again. And so what I did is like I just kind of went on this journey of like this journey of prayer, and where should I put my hope in the place of prayer? What should my hope be whenever I'm approaching this idea of I want to have a prayer life, I want to have a history in God, I want to have a relationship with my Maker, and I want to take it seriously? But like I was approaching it from like a context of stories. And so what I mean by that is I had a lot of really cool God break-in stories. That was our history. Whenever me and Cherish, my wife, whenever we initially took the plunge to become missionaries, well, we really felt like the Lord speaking to do it in this like George Mueller kind of way. If y'all have ever heard of him, I think he was this guy who like, he did these orphanages, and he wouldn't ever ask anybody for bread or anything that he would need, and he would just pray, and the Lord would break in and provide. And I just felt the Lord, like, give me a dream about this guy. I didn't really know his name, but I had a dream. I was like, George Mueller, who's George Mueller? And I go look it up, and I'm like, oh, George Mueller. That's who George Mueller is. And so after praying about it, we really felt the Lord leading us to enter into full-time ministry through that context of believing God to move with powerful, you know, faith encounters. And so I remember our air conditioner broke like in May, and God sent rain for about 3 weeks to keep it like kind of cooler so we wouldn't burn up. And then somebody else who was out of the country gave me $3,000 to buy a new AC without, you know, me ever asking him. It's like it was things like that. Like it was what? It was three. We were given more than $8,000 on a different context. That was another one. We were given $10,000. Somebody, I remember when I was working nights, I would come home and they had this like blue camping chair that just sat. It was really there because I was too lazy and frustrated and tired. And I was just like saying, I am not going to clean this up. I was like, I refuse to bring this in the house. I'm just so tired. And so I just started like praying one time when I go home. I was like, Lord, put money in my chair in Jesus' name. And I'd like unlock the door and I'd like walk in. I did that for like 6 months, like half asleep at 4:30 in the morning coming home. And then one day, God put $10,000 cash in the chair. Like we went and did some kind of an errand. We came back and there was like $10,000 in the chair. It was just crazy. So that was like, that was some of our context of like how we were living and approaching the Lord. And so something happened because, like, we went into a season of pruning. And so whenever we're entering into the season of pruning, a lot of us had a lot of unbelief about what's that actually going to look like. You know, how far will God actually cut into your life? Whenever you had a confidence that you were being fruitful, I knew that I was fruitful. I knew that I worked hard. I knew that I engaged in my prayer meetings. I knew that I worked diligently with, like, the service hours, what I needed to do. I knew that I'd never back down from the confrontation of the difficult conversations that needed to happen. And so I had this confidence in righteousness. I had this confidence in work ethic. I had this confidence in a position that I had, being on a senior leadership team in a house of prayer. I had this confidence before the Lord in this identity. And the Lord shook it to the core. My gosh. It's like he takes you up to the top of this, like, mountain of faith victories. And, like, you're looking out over the thing, you know, and, like, he kind of holds you up, you know, like the whole The Lion King movie. And it's like he kind of holds you up and you're like, yeah, I'm becoming this, like, this lion in the faith. I'm going to be this ruler. And then he, like, takes you and he, like, throws you off the mountain. And he throws you far. And he doesn't pad your fall at all. And so I remember it was like this really painful thing of trying to find my identity again, trying to find, like, what is the safe place of how I can have a prayer life with the Lord, of how I can have, like, a dynamic life of faith and confidence in God and talking to him. How do I do that? And so, like, verse 2, it says, how long, you sons of men, will you turn my glory to shame? We love worthlessness, seek falsehood. I just remember during this time, I'd hear somebody say, oh man, I think transition's coming. Or somebody would give me a prophetic word, oh man, the Lord's going to deliver you. He's going to give you breakthrough. He's going to give you breakthrough. And I remember I would get these false confidences that would come. And I wanted to believe them every single time. Every single time we'd throw our lot in. I remember I would just, like, take the uniform money that we'd get, and I'm thinking, oh, well, I'm going to be delivered in, like, 3 months, so I'll just buy, like, this cardigan or this other thing, you know, because that's kind of cool. I don't really need it, and I would do it, and then the time would come and pass, and I'm still working, and I'm like, dang it, I don't have any t-shirts now, and so now I will work the rest of this year with shirts with holes in them. And I did it, like, actually 3 years in a row. I was so gullible. It was really good. And so I remember this last year, though, I vowed. I was like, I am not spending my uniform money on anything but uniforms. I was like, I do not care if an angel tells me that I am delivered from that job and I'm going back into the house of prayer. I'm going to buy the work clothes. So how do you keep praying when it seems like prayer breaks? That was kind of the journey that I was on. It's like, how do you keep praying when it hurts to believe? How do you keep praying and you keep, because, I mean, we don't have, like, a really passive community. We have a pretty aggressive community. As far as the degree of difficulty that we're willing to put up with, the standard of what we ask people to live by, and, like, what it means, the entry level into participation of what it looks like. Like, if you look around and you compare it with different churches, I would say ours is fairly advanced and fairly aggressive. And so what do you do when God puts the brakes on victory in the place of prayer and he replaces victory with brokenness and pain and hurt? Where's your confidence? How do you keep talking to God when your prayer life was mostly centered around God, asking God for faith stories and him breaking through with faith stories? It was mostly centered around asking God for movements of power and God moving with movements of power, and then he turns the faucet off. How do you keep having the conversation? Because you can't just stop praying. You can't. I mean, that's silly. Like, you can't just, because, like, it breaks, like, okay, well, we'll just kind of put a pause on prayer and we'll focus on something else, you know, until God turns the faucet back on. You know, okay, God, we'll do the diet for a little while, and then we'll wait for you to put the donuts back out, and that's when we'll participate again. you know, but we're not coming to the prayer breakfast anymore, Jesus. We, you know, we'll go to the place of study, you know, and we just, and so it's like, well, how do you keep praying? Because there's a difference between like actually really having an engaged life of prayer where you're reaching for Jesus from a sincere heart position as opposed to a religious exercise of even reading and studying your Bible. I used to call it, like, in my prayer meetings, like, did I spend my prayer meeting reaching? Did I spend the last 6 hours reaching for Jesus? Or was I just on, like, a theological conquest? Was I just on some, like, trying to climb some knowledge mountain? You know, because there's a real difference. You see, Jesus, he even said it to the Pharisees. He's like, you guys search the scriptures because you think you're going to find something there, but you refuse to come to me. You refuse to reach through the pain of your own brokenness and engage with me. And so how do you keep praying when it hurts to pray? So verse 3, the Lord set apart him who's godly. The Lord will hear when I call to him. I had to shift my focus. I had to really change my focus on what it meant to be a believer, on what it meant to be involved with, you know, I would say a forerunner community, on what it meant even to like walk out promises of what I thought, you know, my calling was. I really had to like kind of shift some of my focus. And what I found is that when I would pray for things to change, like in the life, when I would ask for God to remove a stone that would, it seemed like, you know, it was a stone or a problem that was in the way. I found that whenever I was focusing on that, I would feel burnt out quicker. I would feel frustrated quicker. I would have a harder time being nice to my friends. I would have a harder time having good days. I would have more bad days. I find I would make more bad decisions. I would end up going out and buying more stupid things that I wish I hadn't bought and wasted money on, and then I would sell them in regret. I found like all these bad habits were coming out whenever problems came up, and I focused on like my prayer life mainly being, God, take away my problem. And I found that there was one thing that never actually caused any hurt consistently. It was when I would just exist with Jesus. It's when I would just try to approach God without an agenda. When I would approach him and I'm just like, Lord, I'm going to engage you. And it started with like actually trying to pray, you know, Lord, you know, send light in me, help me to love you, help me to have a good idea. And it quickly, I got too tired. I was very, very tired and I really couldn't sustain it. So it really just kind of like trickled down into what it is today, which is mainly about 5 to 8 hours of mumbling songs in tongues while fighting back frustration from other people's bad decisions at my job. And that's the main way that I've been engaging with God for the past year now. And I am happier than I ever have been in my whole life. I have more freedom and more joy. I feel like I'm more agreeable to get along with. I feel like, I mean, I don't know if you, you know, am I more agreeable? Y'all are my friends. I think I've gotten better. I think the cutting remarks, they've dulled a little. I've been able to pull down, you know, some of those sarcastic things. It's like, because so much of that stuff was coming from a place of frustration. It's like, at the end of the day, it's like, I wasn't mad at my friends. I was really mad at God. At the end of the day, I was mad because I still felt mistreated. I still felt like, Lord, you wronged me. And I just found like whenever I would finally stop and approach the place of prayer and approach a prayer life in general as my life of prayer is going to be centered around, I'm going to have a conversation with Jesus, and I'm not going to lead. I'm going to try to have a conversation with Jesus where I'm going to reach for him, and I'm going to talk to him, but my main focus is I want to know what he wants to say, and I want to know what he wants to talk about. And he's made it very clear he does not want to talk about my problems. He's made it very, very clear he is not interested in talking about some of the things that are bothering me as the main thing of my conversation. I want to make that clear. I still pray for stuff that's a problem. I still pray for things that are, you know, it's a sickness, it's a tragedy, avoiding a thing like that. I still absolutely, you know, pray. But as far as the center, the main piece of my conversation and my conversation with God, it's not. It's very, very simplified. Most of it is just, cut me off. Oh, Lord Jesus. That's like really like what it is. It is so uncool looking. It is not powerful. It is not glorious. It is not anything that you could point it out to another person and say, look at this, confidence, right? Like it has none of those things that you could look at it from an outside perspective and be like, man, that guy's really going deep in God. That guy's really, you know, he's on the narrow road. That guy's doing right, you know? He's choosing the way of life. He's choosing the way of wisdom. I remember, like, I still need encouragement from this. I remember I had a dream, and the point of the dream is, like, I was on a freight dock, and I saw, like, some people from the community and even some people outside the community. They were there, and, like, some of the people were working. Other people weren't really working, and I remember, like, this song started playing, and it was like, I choose the way of wisdom. I choose the way of life. I choose the way of wisdom. I choose to live the hard life. It's like that song just kept playing over and over again. And the Lord began to speak, and he was talking. He was showing me the danger of misplaced confidence. He was showing me the danger of placing confidence in things that we do. And placing confidence because we're a part of the sacred trust. Because you're on a prayer meeting. Because you're on 5 prayer meetings. Because you're part of a forerunner ministry. Because you're an intercessory missionary. Because you went through an internship. Because you're successful at your job. Because you have a good job. Because you're looking for a job. Because you had success anywhere in your life. And he started showing me the foolish danger of having confidence in anything other than himself. And he started saying, Luke, I'm about to expose it. I'm about to come and I am going to expose it. The misplaced confidence among my people. Choose the way of wisdom. Choose the way of life. And immediately when he said it, I understood that the way of wisdom, the way of life, it was just the practical decisions to keep my heart undistracted and to try to approach God and to try to engage with him, to make choices of righteousness, to make decisions to live a godly life, to live set apart. And I just knew the Lord was saying, just choose the place of wisdom. Choose the way of life. Have confidence that I'm listening, that I'm watching. Have confidence that I see and that I know. Don't require me to answer every single one before you'll give me confidence in what I say. Trust in my goodness. Oh, it was like such a massive statement when he said it. It's like he just said, choose the way of life, but it's like it just blew up into this whole paragraph. And so that's what I did. It's like, okay, I'm going to choose the way of wisdom. I choose the way of life. Verse 4 says, be angry and do not sin. A lot of times when we've read this verse, I think a lot of people have heard this verse, be angry and do not sin. But when you look at the context, I really think he's actually talking about be angry with God and don't sin. Because it's in the middle of a passage about talking to God and relief from distress and God having mercy and God pouring out breakthrough and hearing God and trusting the Lord. And he says, be angry and don't sin. And so what do you do? How do you be angry and frustrated with God but keep your heart free from sin? How do you keep your heart free from like just kind of going off and doing your own thing? You want to see one of the evidences of this? It's look around. Think of the faces that aren't around anymore. I'm not talking about the ones who like God really was transitioning them. There's some of those. Absolutely. I'm talking about the ones who like they got angry. They got frustrated. Their heart got offended with something. It was pointed at someone, but it wasn't ever at the person. At the end of the day, it was God. It was a hurt in their heart over how God was handling them. And they took it out on a person. They pointed it at a person. It's easier to blame a person than it is God, because you know God will win the argument. But you can draw support if it's a person. It's easy to point out flaws, to shape an argument, to make your heart feel okay with being mad at a leader or being mad at a movement. Very, very easy. But it's a lot harder whenever you say, I'm going to be mad at God, because he's a lot smarter than you, and you know you can't win that one. So we don't do it, you know, we don't even do it. And we don't even go all the way to actually say out loud, I'm mad. We do it real subtly, you know, we use words that don't actually really convict our heart, but let other people know to stay away from us, you know. So be angry and don't sin. What does he say? It says, meditate within your heart on your bed and be still. That's the answer. Whenever you're frustrated over how prayer is working in your life, whenever you are frustrated with how the Lord is handling you. Right now, I think there's like, what, $35,000 in debt or something like that at the prayer room? Something silly. It's a dumb number again. It's like, what does the Lord say? Is it get mad at me? No. Meditate within your heart. Be still. Be still. It says slow down. Don't get worked up. Don't get worked up over that anger. Oh, and especially don't even open your mouth. Don't even talk. Don't say anything. If you want to know a great way to start increasing your degree of righteous decision making, it's say about 70% less things that you say right now. I said that real dumb, but you know what I'm saying. So take like 70% of the things that you say and don't say them, and you probably, just doing that right there, you will have increased your measure of righteousness and godly decision-making. And especially when you're mad, when you feel that frustration, when you feel any sort of a bother because of something somebody did or said or a decision, just go ahead, put the brakes on, stop talking, meditate, be still, slow down. I find when I do this, I just sing just a little bit quieter, and I don't respond to text messages. I don't pick up the phone. I just like, nope, I'm gonna meditate. I don't like what they said. I thought I was very reasonable. I thought I had a case. I thought I had a case with you, Lord. I don't like what you did right here. I'm just gonna, nope. I'm gonna stop, and I meditate, and I go back to that place of singing and talking to God with confidence that he hears me, that he's listening. I just go back to I keep singing. I'm like, Lord, I know that you hear me. I know that you know what these words mean, even though I don't know what these words mean. I know that you know what I'm saying because it's your spirit who is speaking the things through me. I'm talking about the gift of tongues, how it works. And so I just found that like when I just would be quiet and just kind of just lock into this like quiet, engaged prayer thing, if I would just give it time every single time. Sometimes it would take a few hours. Sometimes it would take a few days. It's taken a week before. But eventually, it's just, man, it's like a cloud just lifts off of you. It's like you've been blocked from the sunshine, locked away in a dungeon. Then all of a sudden, it's just, oh, and you're like, oh, gosh, that really was just like oppression. That really was just like anger that had been resting on me for a long time. I'm so glad that I didn't like talk to my friends a bunch, because I probably would have been so mean to them when I did that. I'm so glad that I just said less things. You will just avoid so much trouble when you feel that on you. So, verse 5 says, offer the sacrifices of righteousness. Put your trust in the Lord. Whenever you're frustrated that God hasn't moved in your life, Slow down. Slow down. Don't go looking for a new thing. Don't go looking for a new decision, a new place that you need, a new job, a new position. You know, maybe a change of scenery. No. When you are frustrated that God isn't moving in your life, just commit yourself to the simple process of righteousness and have confidence that God sees you, that He hears you when you talk, that He knows right where you are, He knows what hurts, He knows what you'd like, and just have confidence. Have confidence that He's okay with it and that He's a really, really good leader. And if He's okay with it, He must have a good reason. And it'd be foolish to try to take over and help write the story. I remember like thinking about it, if your life is a story, let God be the author. Let Him author your story. He's such a better writer than you are. Every single one of you is bad at writing. You're bad at making your own decisions. If you don't believe me, that's fine. But I still know that you're bad at making decisions because you're just like me. You're just like me. They've even done like psychological studies that talk about people and how they make decisions and how we actually are confused at how good of decision makers we are, and that usually we make decisions based on if we're happy or if we're angry, and that it really has a lot more that comes down to like the mood we were in before the decision was approached to us, that's actually how we make the decision. And so if that's like what they've kind of like discovered about people and about how we typically tend to bend one way or another, I just don't want to make decisions on my own. I don't want to try and decide the right way. So I just slow down and say, no, Lord, I'm going to stay where you left me. I'm going to stay right where you left me. I don't care if it doesn't look good. I don't care if it doesn't seem like it lines up with my prophetic destiny. Oh, I've heard that one. Oh, this, you know, I just don't think this is going to line up with my prophetic destiny. You know, I kind of need to transition because this will get me in line, you know, some things that the Lord's spoken over my life. It's like, oh, no, that's crazy. I don't buy it, you know. Did Joseph, was like getting kicked into a dungeon only to get rescued, to be sold into slavery? Was that like part of training to be the leader of Egypt, you know? That was some real good training. I bet you got some real administrative tutorage, you know, when you got kicked into the pit, Joseph. I bet, you know, whenever you got abandoned in prison, that really taught you a lot about how politics work, getting stabbed in the back by people. So that's probably how you became like a good leader. No, beloved, that's not how it works. Just stay where God left you. Commit yourself to righteousness, just doing the right thing. You're just, nope, I'm going to live the narrow way, right where God has me. I'm going to enjoy Him. I'm going to trust Him. I'm going to talk to Him where He's got me. Verse 6, avoid these kind of people. People say, who will show us any good? Whew. People will start to, they'll start to talk after a little while. They'll start to say, you know, I just don't know if prayer works anymore. We've all been guilty of this. I'm not trying to call anybody out. I've done this before. But I'm saying let's learn our lessons. Let's learn lessons from the past few years. Let's learn lessons about how to approach God in prayer. Because you'll find people who they'll start to get this idea in their mind that somehow it shifted. That somehow things have shifted, that maybe we missed it. Maybe we missed the prophetic word. Maybe the Lord isn't going to do that magnificent thing that He said He was going to do because it's been so long. Avoid those people. Don't talk to those people as much. You can still be friends to them, but don't go to them for advice or counsel. Go to people who have life, people who have faith. Listen to them, because it says, Lord, lift up the light of your countenance. Shine it on us. He says, illuminate our hearts. Illuminate our hearts again, God, that you really are good enough to be trusted, that it's okay that I can center myself around the place of prayer, that I can just be okay with talking to you, trying to live godly, and that not much else happens, and that's okay if it just looks like that for a while. That I can trust that I'm a tree and you're the one who plants me by the quiet stream. That I can trust that as a believer, it really doesn't have much to do with me about how anointed I could get or how much I can grow. Because the Lord's the one who makes you grow. The Lord's the one who gives maturity. The Lord's the one who gives, he's the one who gives knowledge. Like, you want to look at that Proverbs 2 verse where it talks about, oh, well, you know, it's like, well, you can do prayer, but you know, you really got to have good theology. You really got to get the knowledge of God. Well, Proverbs 2, if you look at it, it's like it every single bit in that first section, it's like, if you ask, you know, if you seek, if you knock, if you search, it's all talking about like synonyms of the place of prayer and having a conversation with God. Really, the idea of a conversation with God committed to a righteous life, this is the central piece of what it means to be a Christian. There is nothing else that you could say is the central piece of what's your responsibility to be a Christian. Because how can you grow in the knowledge of God in a relationship with Jesus if you don't talk to him? And how can you even hear his voice if you don't do the things that he says? So they both work hand in hand. You commit yourself to prayer, but also a righteous life so that it doesn't interfere with your prayer life. It's like one of the main reasons I want to make righteous decisions is because I love being able to pick up on the subtlety of God's movements throughout like the boring day. That I don't have to wait for him to shout from heaven. I don't have to wait for a supernatural encounter. I don't have to wait for like an impacting dream before I'll get excited again about God. That I could live in such a way where my heart is dialed down, that I'm okay with talking to God, and throughout the day I'll get a little bit of these ups, a little bit of these moments. Oh, and it always just kind of ends up toward the end of the day, I'm just a happy mess. If I've done it right, I am a happy mess. You could probably ask Cherish, like the tone of my voice whenever we talk on the phone. Like if she talks to me at 10, it's kind of like anxious. It's kind of like, oh, I don't like what these people did. Are they loading my trailer? I got all this stuff to do. It's like I've got my game face. But it's like by the end of the day, I'm just happy. I'm happy. I'm full of nicknames. I'm just full of gladness. I don't care what's happened. I don't care if I get cut off. By 2 o'clock, I'm good. Especially 3 o'clock. I've had lunch. I've had God. Oh, man, I'm unstoppable at that point. A taco and Jesus. You can't stop me. Verse 7 says, you put gladness in my heart more than in the season that the grain and wine was increased. You can't experience this until God breaks your prayer life and turns off the faucet for a while. You can't experience this kind of gladness. But I want to tell you, when you touch this gladness, it is so much better than any cool financial breakthrough that you could have gotten. The excitement of the big finances, it was cool. I liked getting big finances to solve like financial problems. I liked whenever we've been given cars, and we have been given cars. I like it. But it is not anywhere close to how good it feels that nothing changes and nothing looks like it's going to change anytime soon. And I'm so content and satisfied that sometimes I don't want to take off work because I really find God at the workplace. I find God in my busy, busy day. I find God at my difficult, frustrating job. And I don't take off like nearly as much. I really have a better time at work than most any other place except for worship leading in the mornings. How did that happen? What happened? What shifted? It's this gladness. It's gladness that was found in the wilderness. It will always surpass whatever breakthrough that you think you're looking for and that you're hoping for. The breakthrough that you want is a breakthrough from all your stipulations that you put on God before you'll give him a glad heart. That's the breakthrough that you want. That's what you want deliverance from. You want deliverance from the preconditions you have with God. You want deliverance from these conditions that we put in our prayer life before we'll really give him the rest, before we'll really give him a free heart and free access. That's the breakthrough that you want. The last verse, I'll lie down in peace, for you alone, O Lord, you make me dwell in safety. There's no shift in your life that will bring you peace and the feeling of like a heart at rest, a contentment with God. I remember we had talked a little bit, I remember in some of the leadership meetings when I was still on staff, and we were talking about, oh man, when this is through, I'm going to need like a real long season of like cool breakthroughs and stuff before I'm going to like be okay again. And I remember, I was participating in the conversations too. We'd talk about it like, oh, I just don't think I'm going to be okay until the Lord moves again. And something shifted, and I'm really glad that it has, because I am okay if it doesn't change for another 10 or 15 years. I am okay and I am settled in with it looking difficult. I am okay and settled in if it doesn't feel awesome and I don't feel anointed and I don't see what looks like any cool progress in ministry or in like power or in calling or things like that. I am really just okay if the rest of what I get is to sing God love songs by myself in a truck. It's the lines have fallen to me in pleasant places, and that's my circumstance right now. And before it was like cool breakthrough, the house of prayer, full-time IM with stories, with prophecy, with cool stuff going on the up and up. Oh, I wouldn't trade it for the world. Mm-mm. If you were to offer me money, I wouldn't go back. I wouldn't go back right now. I won't go back unless God gives me an encounter and tells me that I'm supposed to. Because I'm so satisfied right where I'm at with him. I am so satisfied that I get to talk to him and that he's listening. And he is just as excited about hearing my voice and my song in a truck without a guitar as he is the 3 hours earlier when I got to lead worship, as he is, years before when I got to like play a lot more. That he's just as excited. And the confidence that that's who he is and the confidence in that reality, I wouldn't trade that for anything. I wouldn't trade it for anything at all. It is such a freedom and a gladness to be okay with talking to God. That if that's your lot, you have got it good. I might even write a book. I want to call it like Blue Collar Prayer, like the wisdom of getting a simple, repetitive job that doesn't require a lot of thought because of how it'll pay a little bit better than being an intercessory missionary, but you can still do the exact same things. As like the prayer life and all that stuff like that. It's like, it's better, trust me. You won't have to find supporters. The company will be your supporter. They will support you more than the people will. It's a good way to do it. But I just want to pray for us right now. The thing I really want to pray for, I want to pray, if you felt like that touched something in your heart, that you've kind of had some preconditions, that you've kind of held your heart back at a little bit of a distance just because, like, you knew how the Lord treated you before and the Lord has started treating you differently. He has been treating all of us differently. And you still kind of just have, like, I don't know, I just feel like I've got a little bit of a precondition still. Like, this thing where I'm just not quite ready to open up full swing. I'm not ready to reach again. I'm not ready to be okay. Or you feel like you're struggling to have contentment with where you're at and God. Then I want to pray for you.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.